During the summer, when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with friends or alone on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected, so you can enjoy all the summertime vibes, whether you're sharing pics from a rooftop, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show, episode after episode. So, stay connected to your favorite people and your favorite things with AT&T 5G and home internet. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears. Real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
The NBA Finals begin Thursday, June 6th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
Moments like seeing my son's team cheer him on mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
What's up, guys, and welcome to the What Hip Hop Questions, Legends, and Lists. I'm Nyla Simone.
And I am the man that puts the jux in juxtaposition, Mouse Jones.
I just wanted
to put you out there.
I hate when you do that.
You want me to do it?
No, it's
okay,
fine.
Okay, good, because I wasn't going to do it either.
Why you want to start like this?
Because you're sitting in this zen-ass position. It's pissing me off.
I was just telling our guests how I stay mellow. Zen. Before I got here, I did what needed to be done. Anyway. I drink tea because it just be a lot of madness, especially when I gotta deal with an energy like Mouse Jones.
All right, now you're starting with me.
No, let's get into it because we were having a great convo before we turned these mics on. So we have a very special guest in the building. Mouse, you want to do?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Listen,
this is the whole reason I got into doing any of this shit. All right, talking on microphones, talking to people you admire, whose work you truly admire. So I would think that these are, you know, colleagues of ours and friends of ours. And
real journalists.
And real journalists.
You know?
Because it is a dying thing. Real journalism. It's a real thing with real people who do it. Yeah. We have with us today one of my favorite podcasts, if not my favorite, Louder Than a Riot, Sidney Madden and Rodney the Voice.
Welcome.
Carmichael.
Yes. Oh,
come on, man.
See, look at that. So
thank
cool.
You for having us.
Appreciate it.
Thanks. Yes.
Yeah. We appreciate y'all coming, man. How is going from season one where, you know, everybody was inside and it was the pandemic to now season two and everybody's outside and everybody's paying attention and seeing what's going on? What's that been like?
Yeah.
Different. It's been real different. So, yeah, as you said, and we talked to you about season one.
Mm-hmm, on Guys Next Door.
Back in 2020, which feels like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Season one was all about the relationship between hip hop and mass incarceration, because writ large, Louder Than a Riot is about rhyme and punishment.
Yes.
It's about hip hop as a genre, as a culture, as a cultural force, speaking back or sometimes perpetuating things in society. And so season one, I feel like we made some noise. We did. But people were inside, like you said. So for season two, which we wanted to fully expand the idea of what rhyme and punishment could mean, we're kind of looking inward at the culture and what the culture perpetuates, specifically around misogynistic and homophobic double standards. And with us coming up on 50 years of hip hop and the girls and the gays running tings, it's been really, really great. And I feel like rewarding to see the reactions in real time and get to physically talk to y'all about it.
I'm all giddy. I be listening to these niggas, man. Yeah, you talking about? I be listening to these niggas. There's a juxtaposition between you two, right? Like, there's a contrast, like, you know, a younger woman of color and a more seasoned.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was about to say, oh, I seen the way your eyes looked at me, but a more seasoned black man.
Kind of like y'all, right?
No, not at all. We're close in age, actually.
That was great. It's funny. Oh, come on.
You see, that's what be going on. You let people come in here and break us apart. That's the problem right now.
No, you said the bro. Big bro.
I'm Jesus Christ.
Big bro, though.
See what I did right there? You see what I did there?
Shout out to
guys at home, you gotta listen.
Y'all gotta listen to episode 4 for that one.
That'll come back. You'll understand that one next week, y'all.
He's not misogynistic. He's realistic, according to him.
Yeah, that was crazy. But I do want to talk about that. That I think, much like me and Nyla, where we may be close in age, but represent different parts of or different eras in genre and in hip hop. I think the same thing happened with you guys, but you guys with that journalistic take, has it been any, not even has it been, what's been that functionality figuring it out? You know, are we leaning a little too young? Are we leaning a little too heavy? You know, because the topics that you're speaking about aren't just, you know, run in the mill, you know, internet diatribe. Like, it's you guys are unpacking real shit. So I just always think about, like, do you guys have to be cognizant of, are we leaning too young? Are we leaning too old?
I mean, we just embrace it, man. You know, I mean, that was the appeal from the beginning, you know, me and Sid coming together and having these dialogues that we would have in the office after hours.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, shit, hip hop is 50. Like, That includes all generations. That's your kids. That's your mom and them. That's your cousins and all of that. So for us, even when we were really kind of like positioning the podcast at NPR, we knew that was one of the benefits.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, we gonna touch all audiences in terms of hip hop and in terms of who cares about the culture. And at that particular time, especially when we were starting season one, I feel like you don't hear quite as much now, but there was a lot of talk about the generation gap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, I mean, I don't want to take us back too far, but, you know, with the kids and the mumble rap and all this kind of stuff, you know what I'm saying? And so I think that was a strength. I think, you know, we got the gender gap bridge. We got the generation gap bridge. We got the regional gap bridge, you know, cause Sid is, you know, from East Coast North and I'm from the South. So, between all of that, you know, it really gives us some range, I think, you know?
So let's take it back for the viewers who aren't familiar with you guys. What is Louder Than a Riot and how did you guys get started?
You want to start it?
No, you go ahead.
So for anyone who doesn't know and is never heard of Louder Than a Riot, Louder Than a Riot is a podcast, but overall a project that looks at rhyme and punishment in America. So again, we really started tinkering with this idea when we both started at NPR back in 2017, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 2017, because we knew that hip hop deserved it. Hip hop deserves narrative stories, investigative work, really nuanced and conscientious type of profiling. And that has really been few and far between in the audio space. There's definitely been that before. Like Mogul was a huge beacon for us with
Rest in Peace Combat.
Definitely.
Yep. And we wanted to tell stories not about hip hop in a way that didn't come at the genre, come at the culture in a, like an anthropological sense, in like a diluted sense. And it wasn't like a straight profile of a rapper. It was really grappling with the odds and ends and the decisions that go into leading to some of these consequences. So for season one, which we started piloting and got a green light for all the way back in 2018, that was about the connection between hip hop and mass incarceration. And if y'all remember in 2017, Meek Mill's whole, probation in perpetuity, that was something that became a lightning rod in hip hop. Like a lot of people really campaigned around him, gathered around him. But what we were thinking about was what's missing in the conversation. And it's that the carceral state in hip hop has always been at odds.
Yeah.
And it's very rarely dissected and talked about how it ebbs and flows and how one influences the other and all that stuff. So for season one, we dug really deep into stories of lyrics on trial, stories of the power of the prosecutor in the carceral state, stories of women's populations, which is actually at the time one of the most fastest growing populations in the carceral state in America. So that was season one. Season two, we wanted to really stretch what Rhyme and Punishment could mean because, and this is a nod to our latest episode that came out, accountability is a part of love. And if you love this genre, you got to know when to hold it accountable, how to hold it accountable in a way that's not completely destructive. That's in the way that's not like I gotta opt out of hip-hop, because we love it, we want to continue to tell these stories, but we want better for these stories and better for these people making this art as well. And so season two is really honing in on Massage Noir, which is the specific racist, sexist inequality that falls on the shoulders of black women in hip hop, but also in society. I know you already know what I'm talking about.
You guys should have never taught me that word, by the way. I was like, wow, I'm about to use the hell out of
it. But you'll be able to point it out everywhere now. I mean, you already felt it. But now you'll.
So when I'm like, there's a word for this? Yeah. Because I just call everything, oh, that's just misogynistic.
Yeah.
But it's
another layer.
Damn podcast. Never mind. Give them the credit. That's fine. Yes.
No, misogynoir.
Noir.
Misogynoir.
I've been saying it on this damn show. Thank y'all for teaching all of that. Thank y'all.
Yeah.
I'm glad you know it, though. And I'm glad you're sharing.
I mean, in the space that I exist in, you have to, right? Like, and that was one of the questions I wanted to ask y'all later on. But since we're here, like, one, let me ask y'all, when it came to, you know, deciding what you guys were going to talk about or cover season two, what led y'all to land on this specific one? And what was that conversation like before you even brought it to anyone to get a green light, just between you two? Like, what was that? What was that thought process like? Should we go here? Oh, this is where we're going? How do we go about it?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we knew it was going to be hard. We did not want to talk about mass incarceration in season two. We knew that because we don't want to replicate stories of criminality. Like, you don't want to perpetuate the thing you're trying to call out, right?
That's all there is to talk about in hip-hop. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And then, I mean, you see it all the time. Sometimes when hip-hop stories get to big networks, they become nullified. They become diluted to just talk about, like, criminality. So anyway, we knew we didn't want to do that. And then the same way everyone in hip-hop had their eyes and ears on the Meek Mill probation case in 2017, everybody had their eyes and ears on what happened between Megan Thee Stallion and Tory Lanez in the summer of 2020. So as we were getting ready to drop season one, we were already percolating on season two. We're like, yo, this is the next culture shift. This is the next wave that feels like it's just social media fodder and debate right now, but it's speaking to something deeper and more insidious. And once we were on the same page about that, because it didn't really take long to get on the same page about it. We just had to figure out how to get to it, how to tell it.
Yeah. I remember we went on break. I guess that was the end of the year holiday break. Yeah. And I think we were both thinking about it because the first time we met and talked about it in January of 2021, we just honed right in on it. And then it was just about like, you know, and then over the course of the next, you know, year or two is determining what this looks like in terms of whose stories we're telling and how expansive this topic is, mm-hmm. you know, because it could be real easy to just tell the Meg story, you know, or the Meg and Tory story. But I think we wanted to show that what was happening to Meg was not unique. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And show how much it resonates throughout the culture and how much it kind of hip hop is kind of, you know, it's underpinned throughout hip hop. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so we wanted to tell stories that went back historically and contemporary stories and you know, talk to artists, but also talk to people that cover the culture. Just to show how kind of like, you know, pervasive it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In this, you know, in covering this, you know, this entire season, even the episodes that haven't been dropped yet, I guess it could be a question for both of you, but I'm kind of zeroing on you. Has there been any time or has this been like a big mirror for you, like having to look at misogyny and how it plays a part in your life, if at all,
yeah.
right? Like how it's been, how you've, you know, might have, you know, been an actor in it before in your life exactly. or not now, or has it been a piece of you undoing and unlearning? Because it's like that with me. So that's why, like, when what led into this question was when she was like, oh, you know the word. Yeah, being on the grapevine for all them years did not go, like, I had to be accountable for what I said. Yeah. And I had, and, you know, having this, for lack of a better term, this awakening, right? And understanding that, okay, well, I'm going to position myself. I hate the word ally, but I'm going to position myself as someone mm-hmm. who lets, you know, the Black LGBT mm-hmm. plus community know, hey, I got you. Exactly. Let Black women know, hey, I got you.
Right.
And really have to do that, you really have to learn and unlearn, and that gets uncomfortable for men, specifically Black men, because mm-hmm. we might say, you know, we hear it all the time, like, yo, we all want women to win. We all want females mm-hmm. to win.
Up right. until a point.
Up until a point. Right. And we have to and get into that level. So has this been that for you?
Definitely, man. I mean, you know, like you said, I mean, I don't think you could come out of, you know, the era that I come out of and say otherwise. You know, if you grew up, you know, in my era, you know, consuming the culture, being part of the culture that we were a part of in that era, it's touched you, it's tainted you in a certain kind of way. It's shaped your mindset, it's shaped your worldview, your lens. And so, you know, before we got into the making of the season, you know, obviously we kind of foresaw that coming. I think for me, it really started to be real when we got a team together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We got a team, we got a whole new team than we had in season one. And we got a hellified team.
Right, right.
You know, we got a hellified team. In terms of, you know, our editor, Saria Shockley, our producers, Sam and Mono, our lead producer, Gabby. Mm-hmm.
Was Gabby the one that opened the episode with you, the Kim episode?
No, Sam.
Sam. Sam. Oh,
Sam was
okay.
the one who, yeah. Sam was my producer and co-reporter on the episode, the most recent episode,
mm-hmm.
which is the episode about sexual harassment in hip hop media. And it's revisiting the case of Kim Osorio versus The Source.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, and also you hear our team a lot more this exactly. season too. Like the first episode we reported live from the trial of Tory Lanez for mm-hmm. the assault of Megan Thee Stallion. And we had to break. We just, as a matter of being able to sprint and take on reporting the whole trial, we had to break it up. And so you hear Gabby, who's our senior producer, you hear her in the first episode.
Yep.
You hear a lot of our producers.
Which I love, by the way.
Everybody at some yeah. point.
Yeah. I love breaking that. I call it the fifth wall. Like, I love when exactly. you get to hear. It's bigger than us, right? So I love, yeah. like, that's one thing I love about doing this show is, D-Block does not mind hopping on the microphone. So I'm like,
uh-oh.
Nigga, how many checks are you getting from this show? If you cut yourself a talent check, I want in. But I love that yeah. because I love the art of podcasting. And I love the world that, you know, we've all been a part of building. So mm-hmm. let's hear, you know, just same way I would love, I love seeing a documentary and I love seeing the camera. I love seeing them filming, somebody
yeah.
filming
yeah, yeah, yeah.
something. So that I love that y'all doing. I love people that are taking that extra step when it comes to podcasting.
Yeah.
let's get controversial.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Let's talk about journalism.
Okay.
All right?
That's controversial.
Where I'm going is.
Okay, okay.
All right. So specifically around the term journalist. Everyone today is calling themselves a journalist.
Okay.
I don't think me and Nyla refer to ourselves as that. There's a lot of work that goes into that.
What do y'all refer to yourselves as?
I'm a media personality.
Media person. Okay.
Host DJ.
Okay.
Yeah, like I get to do cool things, but I haven't gone to school. I haven't studied the ethics that go into journalism. So I feel like I would be being disrespectful.
Well, I feel like when you do interviews, you do journalism work prior to doing the interview.
Yeah.
But you would hope.
Research. Yes. I mean, some people.
You would hope.
Yeah. But yeah, you research.
So prepare. To that extent, but not like, like I used to write for The Source. I had to actually really do mad research. I don't do that type of research for my interviews. Mm-hmm. So that's the difference. I feel like what you guys do with NPR and on Louder Than a Riot, that's. You guys are live on trial. You know what I mean? Like, you're actually on the ground. That's
not just
real.
giving your opinion. Hey, this is terrible, y'all. I can't believe they're doing this.
That's the real distinction. The hot takes and the people perceiving their opinions as facts and promoting them as facts and willfully and.
And the thing is, people believe it though.
Yeah.
Well, that but that goes in.
Like, you know,
that's what I'm saying. That goes into journal.
Go ahead.
But that goes into being a journalist, knowing that. The words I say right now on this medium will have an effect on somebody reading this.
Yeah.
What do I want that to be? Do I want it to be me informing them? Mm-hmm. Or do I want it to be me leading them? And I don't think anyone is... So, like I said, we're being controversial. So somebody like Nori, right? Somebody like Nori who constantly just... As a journalist... You know, when he does that shit.
I
was not ready
not
for
impression.
The invitation.
You didn't have to do that, but that was entertaining.
He doesn't. Yeah, did I lie? That right there, journalist work. I just did journalism just that now. Was, yeah, I studied him.
Oh.
And then I brought it to you guys.
That was method acting.
Like, I'll take that too. Mac Wilde, coming for your ass, brother. But like, he'll go on Wikipedia or he'll have his nephew. Yeah.
I hope Wikipedia is not his source.
Like, it is. He has said it multiple times.
Oh, wow.
He goes on Wikipedia, writes down the questions, or he'll have his nephew, who I'm pretty sure is doing the same exact thing, send him the questions, and he'll look at his phone and he'll be like, so 1995. And before you can answer the question, he starts talking about a different story. But that is, but he calls himself a journalist. So what is the difference between what you guys are doing with Loud and the Riot and what others like that are doing with their platforms?
I mean, it's you already know the distinction, which is good because I think a lot of people who call themselves media personalities do not, you know, or do not care to understand the nuance between them. I feel like it's a really big distinction because I'm not a media personality. I probably don't have the personality to be.
But you got the voice. You have the voice.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man.
See that right there? You just dropped that octave.
No,
I was flattered. I've never been flattered before in my life. You know when somebody be like, "Oh, I'm flattered." I was just flattered.
Club, the fan club, bro.
Y'all wild.
It's getting crazy.
No, but for real, like. I think that hip hop is really in an interesting place. And it's not just hip hop.
Yeah.
We understand that this is the state of media now. A lot of it has to do with the fact that there's been so much divestment. You know, there's just not the funding in journalism from a local level to a national level, from print media to TV media. It's been going on for decades now. So the hole that's filled that is entertainment. And sometimes the entertainment looks like what it's always looked like to us, you know, rappers rapping. And sometimes it looks different, like rappers saying they're journalists, you know. And and still doing some cool shit. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I love all of the podcasts. I mean, you know, for the most part. I watch them.
I think it does add to something. Let me say that. Yeah. I do say that because I know I'm cognizant of where I stand in this and how I might say something. People are like, see, he hates everything. But I do understand the benefit to that, right? Like if you're into hip hop, certain artists just aren't going to have that conversation with me, with you guys, no matter how good we are with our job.
Exactly.
It's just not going to happen, right? Yeah. Certain legacy acts
exactly.
aren't going to believe like, yeah, shit, I can be this open with this young guy.
Exactly.
But they'll go to Nori or they'll go to whoever's doing a podcast at the time and be like, you understand it. Well, you were there. Mm-hmm. I could talk to you mm-hmm. about this thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think that makes it journalism. And I think it gets very dangerous when we start just putting that stamp on stuff.
Well, see, the thing is now in this era, it's been so long that we've had a lack of it and a void of it.
Yeah.
That I think, you know, a lot of folks consuming the culture at this point, they don't even know to miss it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
That's the confusion point. Yeah.
And that's kind of the scary thing, too.
That's really good.
It's been a long time since we had some real consistent, deep diving quality, you know, hip hop journalism.
Yeah.
And I think you can see it in terms of what the culture produces.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's a ecosystem and, you know, everything feeds everything. And so if we don't have the kind of critical, you know, critical attention being paid to the culture and what people are producing and what we're consuming, it just don't circulate and hit the same, you know? So I think that's really one of the big things that's missing.
I know relationships in hip hop, especially hip hop journalism, is like essential. Is that like tricky for you guys when it comes to producing?
It definitely can be. I mean, it's always a negotiation. It's always a tightrope walk. But I do, before it falls out of my head, I do want to go back to one thing you said, Miles, about going to school for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this journalism is a profession that you necessarily need to go to school for. I don't think you need to go to school or college for a lot of professions these days.
Word.
But you do.
Somewhere you got to learn ethics. And that's what I meant.
That's what I'm getting to. Like, you still need to be. You still need to know the journalistic ethics that are the foundation. And you need to want to be a student. You need to want to be a student. Like, there's a lot of people, going back to what I was saying before, about people assuming that because they are, I don't know, charismatic and people laugh at their takes, that is like their statements are facts. I think journalism at a base level is about learning something, being committed to learn it. This is across any type of beat, and sharing what you learn. And then if you add your own voice, your own identity, your own narrative, your own take on top of that, you still have the base layer of the facts, of sharing the facts that you learned. And I think knowing when something is veering into quid pro quo territory is essential. Knowing when this is, there are complications and it gets into situations of not all the way blackmail, but like, I know something about you. So if you don't want me to tell da-da-da-da-da, you know what I'm saying? Because it is very tricky. This industry is a mix of work and pleasure inherently all the time. So there's always those different streams to navigate. But I think at the base level, you need to know your facts. You need to know your morals. You need to know your boundaries and your line and what you're not going to cross, and not play it by situations, not think about what is going to get you go viral, what is going to get you an ad sponsorship, what is going to get you an exclusive cover, you know, and what is going to get you a big moment. It's more about consistency. What's going to ride you? What's going to be able to drive you to being a consistent source of news? Oh, no matter where you're telling it. Like, going on Ronnie's point, we have very few consistent publications, outlets, specific spaces just for hip-hop journalism anymore. We have people. We have people we can trust and bylines we can trust, but the way media is going, like, those people aren't even safe anymore. So they got to get it how they live at different publications.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And at this point, I'm more comfortable following people I trust rather than places I trust.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we're all at that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you currently listen to the What Hip Hop Questions, Legends and Lists. We'll be right back after this break.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. The NBA Finals begin Thursday, June 6th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC.
During the summertime, when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with friends and family. Or on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected, whether you're at home or on the go, so you can stay connected to your loved ones and to your favorite things. Whether you're sharing pics from the best rooftops, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show episode after episode after episode. So, connect at home or on the move with AT&T 5G and home internet and create memories and more all summer long. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth, which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that is spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
To speak a bit more about relationships or you know, kind of expound on that, relationships sometimes are bigger than just the linear, I know you, you know me, mm-hmm. we're friends. I'm trying, like there's the relationship between, which I want to talk about, there's the relationship between fan and, you know, person worthy of fandom, mm-hmm. Which I directly want to talk to you guys about because on your last episode, well, not your last episode, last week's episode with Trick Daddy, or was that 2 weeks? 2 weeks episode?
Yeah, it'll be.
Because you had a week in between.
Yeah,
episode four, mm-hmm. with you guys specifically spoke to Trick Daddy. Mm-hmm. And there was a moment in there where he kind of got annoyed.
Let's get back to your relationship with Trina, right? Your brother-sister relationship, where yeah, she came.
And I got to go. We over an hour, and this whole conversation is about Trina.
Okay, so.
I thought y'all wanted to interview me. Y'all asked me everything about Trina.
No,
like,
I mean.
This happened, Eric, like, I understand this. Y'all tricked me, but go ahead. We gonna ask about 3-4 more questions because we over an hour already.
Now, for the record, y'all, I swear we did not set out to trick that.
And you guys are talking to him about a very serious topic and giving him an opportunity to be accountable, maybe even, you know, show some remorse or just come to a different thought process. Mm-hmm. And there came a moment where this typically, and I'll be the one to say, this typically happens with Black men when they're confronted with their misogyny war and that. There comes this moment where, I don't know if you guys seen it, but there's a switch that they go from kind of open to... Now this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I heard that audibly, but you guys had to see it. And I'm pretty sure at some point over the last 15 years, y'all have sung a Trick Daddy song, been a fan of something he's done. Right. So what is that? What is it like as a journalist or as anyone talking to someone that there is some type of fandom, but you see this thing that you vehemently, viscerally disagree with and then like standing on it?
Well, I mean, we already understood what we were walking into when we went to Trick Daddy's house in Miami. Because we've seen the Love and Hip Hop episodes. We've seen him and Trina go back and forth and the way that he tries to take credit for her career, you know, way beyond just the first song that they did together.
Which is the theme of the conversation.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that what we hoped, the best thing we hoped for was, like you said, that he would be willing to be a little more reflective about their relationship. And, you know, this is 25 years later now.
Right.
You know, I mean, they were practically kids at the time. You know, we are older and we mature and that kind of thing.
You would hope.
You would hope.
Yeah, you would hope.
But, you know, I think sometimes it's also hard for artists, an artist like Trick, because... it's everything he stands on.
Right.
Everything he stands on is being the kind of, you know, misogynistic, you know, type of dude that he has always been. I mean, that was the appeal when we were bumping Trick Daddy in, mm-hmm. you know, late 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I think, you know, the box that you create for yourself ends up in some ways becoming like, you know,
a cell.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? And so I think he's kind of stuck in that place, and he feels like then, like you say, he has to defend that position. And you know what I mean? So it was interesting though, because, you know, like you said, it happens in front of your eyes and you know, we're sitting in his living room and he's got his pit bulls coming in and out, you know what I'm saying?
No.
It feels very, you know.
One of them was like tangled in the wires of the mic at one point.
Yeah. Remember that? Yeah. And
the point of the pitch?
A death row or something. That's what it sounds like.
I mean, we sitting on the couch with him, just like we sitting right here, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like you say, when it's in your face, it's a lot different than hearing it, you know, on music that you can push pause on and that kind of stuff. So... I don't know what was your experience. What was it like for you, Sid?
I mean, with the second season being about who gets misogynistically marginalized within hip hop, there weren't that many hetero Black men who were going to talk to us about this subject.
Right.
So this was actually one of the few, and I mean, a lot of people declined to talk to us based on what we said, the pitch. but this was one of the few moments where there could have been accountability. And I'll just say, like, being a Black woman who's worked in hip hop for so many years at this point, I was prepared for the response.
Kind of hardened to it already.
I mean, it's a precarious place of when you do want to push back as a Black woman in an interview.
Mm.
And then they go from feeling open, feeling like maybe at best it's an intimate space, it's a safe space where you can start talking, like you can really start talking about the music, really getting granular, to all of a sudden. But also like sometimes like, oh, she cute. This can be a flirting opportunity too, to like, nah, nah. She trying to tell me, she trying to paint me like that. I ain't going out like that.
Right.
So I was very prepared for the lack of accountability and the shutdown. And I'm proud of the way we handled it. I don't think.
Well done. It was like.
I was about to say.
You saying y'all? Like there was parts where you can hear you still.
Yes.
You stayed on him.
Yes.
But then Rodney's voiceover would come in. But you still hear you in the back. And I'm exactly. like, oh, that's tough.
She was, hey, yo.
You was acting like one of them pit bulls.
What were some of the people that said no?
To the fire.
It was, what'd you say?
Who said no?
Who said no?
To doing the interview.
Oh, wow.
Oh, who are the people that have said no? To talking on the season?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, pff, a lot of people.
Yeah. Do we want to say?
I don't know.
I don't know if we want to say.
All right.
Look at now. I mean, get controversial.
If you listen to each episode, though, you can figure out
together.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You can assume, okay, who would have been the party in this episode?
Who could have been accountable? Would've...
And then even in certain episodes, like this morning when I listened to, episode 5, about the OG Kim. You said it flat out, like we reached out and
right.
he said no out. Until then we DM'd him. Then all of a sudden they're checking for it. It's like,
yep.
There's always something with these.
There's always something. So yeah, the episode that just came out. I mean, again, another opportunity for moving forward, humility, accountability, you know, looking at a situation with fresh eyes and, you know, more time between. And so, yeah, the episode is about Kim Osorio's sexual harassment lawsuit against The Source magazine and its co-owners back in like 2005, 2006, and how she specifically did not win on the sexual harassment and gender discrimination claim. She won on other lesser claims and what that could have meant for hip hop. If she was awarded, it could have been a real like, you know, bell tone. It could have been a real culture shift of sexual harassment is not to be played with. Like it's not condoned in this industry, in this culture at all. But it wasn't. So we kind of look at the missed opportunity of it. And so within that, we did try to interview, we did our due diligence. We tried to interview Benzino. We tried to interview Dave Mays. And Benzino didn't answer for months and months and months. And then we hit him on DMs. And his only question really was, is there a check involved? And we don't pay for interviews. Like, and that's another journalism standard.
I
feel like that would have been a great moment for him, especially the fact that he has daughters and daughters that we know that he could have like.
Yeah. And then Dave Mays took it even a step further. He never responded to our producer. He never said yes or no, but he hit us back via his lawyer saying that he sent Kim Osorio a cease and desist.
Which is so.
Threatening to sue her if she breached her contract. If he heard anything on our podcast that indicated she was breaching her podcast.
It was so funny hearing that, right? This morning on my way to the gym, because I'm like, there's no way these two niggas was acting like that. Because I was telling Nyla and D-Block last week, or was it the other day? I forget. But I was telling them over the pandemic, I had, you know, when Clubhouse was going, and it took me so long to get on there. Because I was like, what do I want? I talk for free. What? All right. And so I was like, you know what? If I get on here, I'm going to use this as a space to delve and be respecting journalistic things.
I remember that. Wait, I remember that.
So I did the room.
Yeah.
So I did
Aaliyah
the room.
Aaliyah was in that.
Oh,
Aaliyah,
yeah,
who you hear.
Aaliyah.
Yes.
Kim.
Yeah, that was good.
Dave. Yep. Benzino. Yep. All of them was in this room.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for the next 2 weeks, they both were hounding me. One other person, I ain't going to say his name here because he asked for too much credit. But all three of them were on my neck for the next 2 weeks. Hey, you should come do this. Hey, you should come do this. And I'm like, so when I heard, I'm like, wait, people were reaching out to you for interviews and you were begging me to do another, like literally begging, we should do another room. And then I could tell you the story and I could tell you the story. And I'm like,
I mean, but that's the difference. Yeah. Like the room was about the glory days.
Exactly. Yeah,
we wasn't gonna. We weren't asking about the glory. Days, you know, was asking about when shit got sticky, shit got grimy. You know,
yeah.
And how the situations could have been handled,
right?
And how they're looked back on now, maybe with a fresh perspective, or maybe not.
What do you think hip hop's problem is with accountability?
See, these are hard hitting journalistic questions.
Okay, right? That's Mouse. Why
when Mouse yes. said he, I
know. Right?
No. Notice what I said. I said I want to be one. I'm just. Not, I know so many people. I know you guys, and I know so many people that work in. Like I said, when I say go to school, I just mean you went and learned the ethics. I'm self taught and all this, but I can't learn ethics. I have to go look that up, and I just.
But I mean, it
would
is.
Feel...
You are asking like the essential questions, exactly. and. Hip hop's problem with accountability is just society's problem with accountability.
I was gonna say
accountability requires you to give up power, and people don't.
What we were talking about earlier.
Do that.
But I think mostly everything that we're talking about in regards to hip hop culture, it's not just on hip hop culture. It's just American culture across the board. I didn't want to say it earlier because we were getting too in deep.
No, it's gonna come out.
Yeah,
this isn't. It's a world renowned problem.
Yeah, and the irony is, hip hop was created because. People didn't have power.
In protest.
Yeah, in protest for the way that Black people in America were being forgotten about, marginalized, oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Still to this day, like, it's a huge accelerator for hip-hop and the messages in hip-hop. And the irony of the way that power exchange or inequality of power is replicated in hip-hop is what is, you know, it's...
I mean, it's just a reflection of the culture. But I do think that now, because you guys are doing think pieces like this, I feel like we're growing into a space where men are changing their ways.
You do?
I wish.
I mean, look at Mouse.
I'm an outlier.
Okay.
I'm an outlier.
Reform.
I'm not reformed. Let's not say that. But once again, once things are put in front of you, you now have a choice.
Exactly.
Am I going to continue to do, okay, growing up, like we said, growing up in this culture, consuming this culture, specifically in New York, it was like, okay, doing this growing up used to be funny.
Mm. Yeah.
Now as an adult, doing this makes a whole entire group of innocent people feel a way. Mm. Do I still want to be responsible for that?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is no.
I have these debates with my dad all the time about things that was normal to him. Same. I'm like, that's actually mad offensive, and I feel like, you know what I mean? And he's like, you know what? You're right. So it
must be nice. My dad be like,
yeah,
keep going. I'd be like, all right.
I like what you said, it's about taking accountability. But I'll say for me so far in my journey, like I've ran into both. I've ran into like men like Charlamagne who embrace and empower and constantly like try to big up. And then I've ran into guys who tried to fuck and fuck me over and like try to belittle me or not take me seriously because I'm a woman. So I feel like I've been lucky. Whereas like I feel like if I came around the 90s, like I've heard horror stories of like men trying to beat up women because they got two mics, you know, from like the source or something like that. Yeah. So I say,
can we make like a huge conscious effort to protect like women like Nyla and women like Sid? Like, you're not gonna play. Like, and I think that is what needs to start happening. Is it gonna happen? I think Lotto said it on your last episode. It's on the men. The men have to fix it. We can't, just like we tell people, sometimes some people listen to this, but. It can't be the burden of the oppressed person to teach the oppressor.
Exactly.
The oppressor has to find the error within their ways, right. And then say, do I want to continue to oppress or do I want to liberate?
Well, let me ask you something, because like how you call yourself an outlier. How hard is it to be an outlier when, because you know, I'm a little older, so
mm-hmm.
you know, I feel like if you ain't starting to come to your senses a little bit by this age, it probably ain't no hope for you. But
it's like that a few ages down as well.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, so it sounds super corny. So I grew up, so let's just talk about massaging the war, right?
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in the church.
Okay.
I was constantly shown, what's the word I'm looking for? The hypocrisy in a lot of the messages, right? Mm-hmm. Specifically fire and brimstone.
Mm-hmm.
If you're gay, you're going to hell. That's funny because... the minister of music is gay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what y'all got to say about it. He's gay. That big ass bow tie is not for any. He's gay.
So right.
But you'll benefit from him making sure your sound sounds good and your ministry sounds good. But then you'll step on that same pulpit and then condemn him to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Women, I've watched women be demeaned.
Mm-hmm.
Both. Consciously, subconsciously watched them. You know, and we could talk about that a whole other topic, right? Just the insidiousness of the Black church.
Right.
But just specifically seeing that on a surface level being like, okay, so you give this woman all the credit. Oh, the woman, she keep the house. She's the head of my house. Oh, the first lady, da-da. But she can't preach. Mm. She's not allowed to preach. Or, you know, she has to damn near call you daddy to get some type of... Mm. It just never made sense to me, right? So then I would always have that critique, right?
Okay.
And then I just didn't want to be a person. As a person, right? I didn't want to be a person who's just evil to people that don't deserve it. Mm. We're talking about innocent people. So if me running out, we from New York, so we know the F word used to fly. Mm. And it wouldn't even be at gay people.
Right.
That would be the thing. I could count, and I might be dragging, but I don't think I've ever in my entire life called a gay person the F word growing up. It was always a friend-to-friend thing, right. A peer-to-peer thing.
Yeah.
But then you realize, hey, this offends people.
Yeah.
People who ain't bothering you.
Right.
That's always been, as somebody who don't mind offending people,
doing anything to you.
I am offending people. I'm bothering people that ain't bothering me.
Yeah.
Here, let's fix that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Don't nobody want to hear that shit because there comes an access with the disrespect.
Yeah.
Somebody's oppression lends to somebody's access elsewhere. Mm. And I didn't learn that in full until I was became a cast member of The Grapevine. Now I'm no other place was I sitting. My mom and her homegirls weren't having these conversations.
Yeah.
And if they were, they weren't having them around us. My cousins wasn't having these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I was only seeing one side of it, and that's the barbershop side.
Exactly.
Man, bitches, this. Right. Man, you better watch yourself around these bitches.
Right.
The only other instance you have, the only other opinion you have is Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
If we're being honest,
because
you're listening, like, wait, for real? Hell no. And so sitting on that Grapevine cast for so long, it was like, nah, you're looking at the mirror. Some shit got to change, bro.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't happen to everyone. The same way I looked in the mirror and said, some shit got to change.
Mm-hmm.
Other people, and you can go look at it. I'm holding that same mirror to other men and be like, look at this, bro. You want to keep doing this? And the answer would be an emphatic yes.
Yeah.
I want to keep doing this. Yeah. I want to keep living this way. Yeah. I want to keep, because there comes an access. And I think that's what everyone needs to understand. I think when it comes to these conversations about misogyny war, mm-hmm. and all of this, I think there's two things that need to be examined. One, someone's oppression immediately leads to someone else's access, right? Immediately, it's like the science of it, right? Yeah. If I oppress you here, that means I get access here.
Mm-hmm.
That's why people vote the way they vote. Mm-hmm. That's why people spend the money the way they spend it, where they live, where they live. I oppress somebody, we move this community of people out of this neighborhood, that means brand new apartments for people to come gentrify,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if we keep our foot on these women's neck, that means these niggas keep getting to be mediocre and nobody can challenge them.
Yeah.
That's what Jamila Lemieux's whole piece was about, which was really a guiding light to us when we were starting to do research and we were trying to figure out which stories to tell. Because, I mean, for the 10-episode sprint, you can only tell 10 stories and then you got to match up with what stories you want to tell and who you can get. Because, again, some people said no. But I remember... So much when we were talking about our research, you kept pulling up that article. What was the name of it?
Black Ass Lie. Well, that's not the full title, but it's Dave Chappelle. It's basically, you know, in response to Dave Chappelle's comedy special, The Closer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And his transphobic elements to it. Yeah.
And man, that's a deep essay, you know. And actually, you know, you were talking a lot about accountability. And there's going to be an episode a little later in the season where I kind of explore that ground a lot, you know. And I talked to Jamila.
Right.
And some other folks.
She's literally one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. You're now listening to the What? Hip Hop Questions Legends List. We'll be right back after the break.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises? or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. The NBA Finals begin Thursday, June 6th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC.
During the summertime, when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with friends and family. Or on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected, whether you're at home or on the go, so you can stay connected to your loved ones and to your favorite things. Whether you're sharing pics from the best rooftops, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show episode after episode after episode. So, connect at home or on the move with AT&T 5G and home internet and create memories and more all summer long. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future. Building off the hard work our parents have done before us, we all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Moments like seeing my son's team cheer him on mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
I'll say this in regards to, it's not really accountability, but I guess into like hip hop toxic norms. Mm-hmm. They're so normal, you don't even realize that it's toxic, right? Exactly. And that's the tricky part.
Yeah.
So it's hard to even, because I actually want you guys to elaborate a little more about episode 3 and how you guys broke down the three different stories under the same lens. But just like, you don't really realize what you're in because we've just been in it for so long. So.
Facts.
Yeah. It's just gonna take a complete lifestyle change. You know?
You gotta destroy it.
But how are you gonna make a lifestyle change when you're just making so much money off of it? Because everybody is getting bread.
You mean in regards specifically to the theme on episode 3?
You just mean overall.
Or you just mean overarching?
I meant overall with everybody. Like, why would men stop rapping about this if they're making a lot of money off it and people are doing it? Why would women stop, you know, selling sex if I'm making all this money off of it?
Yeah, well, I mean, on the point of selling sex, I think that was a big meditation we had for episode 4. I do want to talk about 3, but episode 4, which is all about sexual agency, it's selling sex for whose eye. Because Trina was, you know, Trina is so much of a blueprint for a lot of the girls today because she not only got really explicit on the mic, but she did it for herself. She centered herself. She turned men into accessories at a time when Uncle Luke and Two Live Crew, they were treating women as accessories. She literally flipped the script on it. And then she flipped the script again when she outgrew Trick, who presumably made her. Yeah. But I think it's always just about, it's about intent. Like, what is the end goal to it? And if the end goal is a check, you gotta, I don't know, you should think about what your relationship to overall capitalism is, you know, which is another underpinning of hip hop now. And it's a huge accelerator to a lot of the decisions we make. Yes, because we live in a capitalist society, right? Yeah. But I think it's, who are you doing it for? Who are you speaking to? What is your audience? What do you want to give your audience? And what are you trying to get out of the art you're creating? Because I don't want to discredit anything about the themes in it. Because art is catharsis in a lot of ways. And going back to the black ass lie, a lot of the dehumanization of black women in music historically has come from black men being dehumanized in all other facets. And then once they have their own voice and their own microphone, you know, that residual dehumanization to actually get some of their sense of self back. That's a broad overgeneralization. But going back to Mouse's point of, if you're so oppressed, you want to do something sometimes to feel less suppressed, and you got to look around and be like, okay, who can I residually oppress so that I can feel like I have some access, that I can feel like I have some control and agency over it. So Trina flipping the script and being like, nah, actually, I'm gonna have you eat my pussy and I'm gonna get the car note on the way out, thanks. Like, you know, she was completely flipping not only capitalist norms and not only sex social norms. Yeah, so many social norms. But I guess as it relates to episode 3, the main theme of episode 3 is body policing. And it's this idea which flows from the male gaze, which is the idea that everything done in society, everything that a woman does in society is in the eye of what a straight man wants to see. And in hip hop, it's like a straight black man. So it's male fantasies. And when you don't fit into that very specific box, that very specific mold, you are ostracized, ridiculed, dehumanized in so many different ways. So we looked at how that can happen on a personal level, and then a social level, social media level, and then also on a corporate level. So we talked to 3 different artists who've had their bodies policed in 3 different ways that are completely, like you said, normalized at this stage in the game at this point. So we talked to Dream Doll, who got real deep, and I can't thank her enough for being so open with me about the real motivations behind all her surgeries, behind her breast augmentations, her BBL. When she had this moment where she was like, actually, this BBL is putting toxic chemicals into my body and I need to take it out. Like, what was I doing this for? And it all, on a real personal level, it all flowed back to a dusty ex, like an ex who was body shaming her. And she was like, I'm gonna get over on him. And then she, you know, she became a body girl, a body, yaddy, yaddy, to a reality star, to a rapper. And she's very open with all her surgeries on social media, in person, in her music. And then we spoke to Baby Tate. Rodney went to Atlanta and talked to Baby Tate a couple times about that moment when she was on Afropunk stage in 2021. She felt great on stage. And then the internet dragged her. The internet dragged her because her stomach was not on flat and her ass was not like all the way up her back. You know what I mean? And so it's just,
her back is hilarious.
This is great. It's just wild. But again, the internet dragged her and she clapped back and then things kind of dissipated. But what we want to always do in in Louder is look at the context of it. Take things that sometimes feel like a blip on the radar and really investigate their deeper meanings. And then for the third act, we talked to Dochi, who's on TDE, one of the most, I feel like one of them to watch in this next couple years.
Yeah.
And the stand that she wanted to take with her debut video on TDE for Crazy. She was purposely naked. She purposely had an all black female femme cast who bared their bodies, not for the male gaze, but in direct opposition to it. And she was residually censored by YouTube. They told her she was violating guidelines because what she was putting on the screen with that video was deemed to be sexually gratifying or titillating to men. She's like, it's actually the exact opposite of that. And so it was restricted from trending. It was restricted from a lot of promotion. I mean, in that case, it's, she's come up off of it. Crazy is a great song. I feel like I hear Crazy in commercials,
OD.
TV ads, mm-hmm. OD now. So it's like, who got the last laugh for real? But still, it's like, these are the battles that people just talk up to. Oh, it's the industry. It's the culture. Da, da, da. It's like, no, actually, it's deeper than that.
Yeah.
There's going to be a couple episodes coming up where we really get in the weeds, you could say, and like untangle a lot of the misogynistic underpinnings of artists who've had to just deal with it and keep it moving. And you know, for the sake of getting their bag, for the sake of feeling like they still want to make art, for the sake of sometimes just feeling like they need to stay relevant. What are some examples of that we could talk about?
It's Rico, for sure.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Rico, I think this was also in 2021 when everybody started going back outside for the first time. Rico Nasty was the opening act on Playboi Carti's tour.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh,
that was,
and
yep.
She got, I mean, in the grand scheme of it, it was a 20-stop tour, but for three or four essential stops, she was harassed nonstop to the point where somebody threw glass bottles at her. And this is not the first time somebody's thrown a glass bottle on stage. This is not the first time someone's thrown a glass bottle on stage at a rapper. Mm. But the motivations behind that throw, and then what that really was an echo of what her fans, who represent a very expansive femme demographic, yep, in hip-hop, what they were feeling when they had to be standing there and watch the person they actually came for get booed, get ridiculed, and get feeling accosted, highly uncomfortable. Yeah. And then they're feeling accosted by Playboi Carti fans too. So we get into that really deep. The Makonnen episode is a great example of that too. You should talk about that.
Yeah, the Makonnen episode is, I mean,
what happens when you don't fit in the box and what the decisions you have to make for it.
Exactly. I mean, everybody knows that, you know, Makonnen and Drake made history together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pretty quickly after Tuesday went up, you didn't hear much about Makonnen after,
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of rumors and a lot of things that happened. But when we talked to Makonnen, you know, Makonnen was not out at that time.
Right.
You know, this was 2014, and a couple of years later, he did come out, and he lives in Portland now. So we went out to Portland and talked to him. He's in a really good space, first of all. He's in a great space. He's still making dope music, but he had to remove himself from the industry because the industry wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he kind of predates, you know, this era we're in now.
The progressive era.
Exactly, yeah. Where we see more queer artists, you know, getting mainstream, you know, visibility and success, you know, and really running the industry in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of was just before that curve. And so, you know, we really get into, I really love this episode because of how we end up talking about this, this relationship, this partnership between him and Drake, and what it says about black masculinity and what it says about the threat that somebody like Makonnen might have been to somebody in Drake's position.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I think it's going to be really interesting to kind of go back and look at that era through the lens of where we are now and really kind of just break that down and see it in a new light, you know? And I hope that Makonnen gets some love that he deserves and really credit for being, you know, way ahead
you know, musically, but also just, you know, like stylistically, culturally, and a whole lot of other stuff, you know?
When we talk about misogyny, misogyny and hip hop have gone hand in hand since, I don't want to say since day one, but definitely since the commodification of hip hop, definitely since the dawn of gangster rap and all that, what we know to be hip hop.
Even before that.
See?
Yeah.
So we talk about that, right? Even going back to when Dre and Snoop were like, you know, bitches ain't shit. And then Queen Latifah responds, you know, who you calling the bitch, you know? But today it's like the popular female rappers, some of our favorites. It seems that they are in protest or just because that's what they want to do. They're kind of doing the same thing, but turning it inward. So is it still objectification if women are taking control of it?
When you say turning inward, what do you mean?
So like if where Dre and Snoop or, you know, the masses were, you're a bitch, you're a bitch, you're a bitch, you're mm-hmm. a bitch, and you a hoe, you a hoe, you a hoe, you suck this dick, da da da. But now women are like, I'm a suck this dick, I'm a bitch, I'm this, I'm that, I'm whoever I want to be. Mm-hmm. Is that still objectification? Because I think that's a question on the men that's in the middle that's trying to figure things out. I think that's a bigger that's a big question that I see a lot. So from your standpoint or from, you know, what you've guys been experienced reporting on, right. Do you still look at that? Do women see that as objective or do they not care?
I mean, I think that's a person-to-person question. I remember when, taking it back to 2020, I remember when WAP came out. Remember when WAP dropped?
That shit. Everybody was upset.
Yo, what a year. What a weird space.
Everybody was inside and upset.
I was loving it. I was like, yo, thank God somebody gave us something new, something fresh, a complete flip. Cardi is always good for that, though.
Yeah.
But it was so funny. I remember... I was packing up one of my friend's apartments and it had just dropped and they don't work in music. So I was like, yo, did you see this video? Did you see this video? They were like, no. We stopped everything in amidst all the boxes and we watched this video. And it was so hilarious, my friend's reactions. One of my friends was like, yo, this is fucking amazing. Play it again. These are bad bitches. And the other friend is like, the whole song is about pussy?
They both were women?
Yes.
That's so
yes.
funny.
I mean, it's... But in that division, in that binary of points of view, it comes down to personal choice. Like, there's another example of this in... Ride or Die, which is the book by Shanita Hubbard,
yeah.
who we also reference in
episode four
mm-hmm. of this season. And it's all about where does agency lie on the line? Like, if you say, for example, let's take Megan Thee Stallion. Megan Thee Stallion, like, She'd be twerking for TikTok or twerking for where else, but she also just twerks for herself. I'm sure for every little sliver that we see, I mean.
She's probably all day twerking, right?
Her whole camera roll, probably that, because that's what makes her feel good. That's what she loves to do. And that's how she celebrates her body. That's what she does in direct, like, subversion of somebody probably telling her not to do it. I think there's a line on one of her songs. She's like, it's 2020. I'm not still about to argue with y'all about twerking. I'm not. So when all these people came at Megan and Cardi talking about how this is, like, completely, you know, obscene and
crude, what about the kids?
Like, what about the kids? That, first of all, don't even
what about
started,
the kids was crazy.
Don't even get me started on... how people try to use their children as shields for morality policing. That's a whole
censorship.
I feel like in every facet. But
kids
it's all about...
They just want to watch Paw Patrol.
Individual. I don't know nothing about Paw Patrol. isn't there a better one, Gracie's Corner, right?
Oh, I'm not hip.
You better
be. Apparently, are you serious?
You got 3-year-olds. She's watching Gracie's
Paw
Corner.
Paw Patrol has, like... Never, I'm not gonna speak. Let me be quiet because I don't even know. Anyway.
Okay.
I just hear from my...
Paw Patrol is problematic?
I feel
it's
like
it's Paw Patrol. They some cops.
Oh, real.
Okay. I feel like there's some problematic elements. Okay, okay. This is what I'm hearing from my friends that have kids.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's
gotcha,
okay.
Gotcha.
We are not Team Paw Patrol.
Yeah, I definitely watched the police paraphernalia around.
Yeah, it's that fuck the police, fuck the Paw Patrol.
But going back to my point, how do you stay on topic? But going back to my original point, it's about the individual choice. I don't think that we could insert any name of like rap girl who's running things. I don't think it's fully in the vein of how it was a couple decades back, where it was like, this is the only way you can get put on. The space is so big and so expansive, so disparate now that you can put yourself on and you can craft an image or persona that does include sex, and it's not the end result of like getting the attention of a man. Like, I don't think starting to go to shows more in this, you know, what they call like a renaissance of women in rap. These shows are packed out with girls, women and femmes who feel empowered.
And seen.
Heard, felt, want to get up on stage and feel like, and it's not for any man in the room.
Yeah. And see, that's, I feel like, the big difference when you look at this era versus the reverse era that you're talking about is whose pleasure is being centered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I came up on the Luke and Two Live era. You know, if you saw a woman on stage shaking ass, there were a whole bunch of men around.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And when you go to or see the videos, you talking about WAP. I don't know. Is there a single man in the WAP video?
Not a straight one.
It's a whole lot of twerking.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of, you know, sex going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's...
The South couldn't help but come out going on. Sex is going on, y'all. It is sex in the video. It's going on. They said, Rodney, was sex happening? No, it was going on.
Yo.
I like what you said about it being like up to the individual.
Right.
And I think across the board, when it comes to the topic of misogynoir in general, it's up to the individual of men to want to grow and be held accountable and change. And it's up to women on how they want to present themselves. Because I think at the end of the day, I guess my beef with it is that there are just different types of people across the board. You know what I mean? There are men who are womanizers. There are women who do the same thing in return. Mm-hmm. There are some people who are modest. There are some people who aren't. So I think just changing the lens and making it fair is just what's the important part of the narrative that you guys are doing, which is dope. So that's my flowers to you guys. But
thank you. And I think we're in an era where with social media and with so many different means to talk to people and connect with people, I don't feel like an artist like, Saweetie. I feel like I know so much more about Saweetie than I would know about
A Kim or a Foxy,
because she connects directly. She's not just rapping about her BBL or whatever it is. She's also doing cooking videos. She's also showing off her nails. Megan, the fact that we know so much about Megan's love of anime, as an example, like,
you can see the complex layers.
Like, people are multifaceted, and I don't think that's a piece of grace that was offered to women in a couple decades or a couple generations back. Mm. And that's not to fault them.
Yeah.
I don't think it's something where it's like, oh yeah, these women in the old school were, you know, they were silenced or stuck or they had to be tokenized. Like, they were working with what they had. And they're the reason that these building blocks are even there for us as Black women working in music, for Black women making music, to even have the dexterity and even want to show off and have the community to have us back up, have what we do be backed up.
Yeah.
So I think it really is about showing off a more multifaceted level or version of yourself and having it always be led by individual choice. I love that.
When, what is it when, or how do we deal with it or point a finger at it, put a finger on it when it's, is it still misogyny war when women are the actors in it? Right? When we're looking, when we're talking about, that's why I asked if both of your friends were both women, mm-hmm. because there's the women that are like, yes, empowerment. But then there was women that were kind of siding with the group of men that were like, put your pussy away. Mm-hmm. Stop talking about this. What a
Jermaine Dupri kind of stepped in it, right?
Yeah, Jermaine Dupri, when he, you know, he's like, he said it's strippers raps, but which is fine with me. They can rap.
But we've always had stripper rap.
I know.
I don't get it.
Eve like was a stripper.
They act like strippers do not like, are not culture creators. Like the strip club.
The A&Rs are the strippers.
Exactly.
We've been saying this for years. Yeah. Oh, I got to go play this in a strip club.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. That's how you know if you really got something. If it really goes up in the strip
so
club.
So God forbid they say, you know what? I want to take a stab at rapping.
Yeah.
I'm tired of sweaty ones. If you are tired of sweaty ones, you might not be tired of sweaty ones. Just saying. Yeah. But what happens when it's the women that are the ones saying these things? Is that something that happens in a vacuum? Or is that something that can lend to misogyny war staying in place?
It definitely, women can be misogynistic. We know that's true. Misogyny war can come for anybody because we live in a patriarchal, misogynistic society overall. So yeah, you can have it be internalized in ways you don't even know.
Yep.
But I think it's really more about opening up the conversation and just changing the mindset, changing in some ways like the brain chemistry of how you're thinking about it. I'm like, what's the main issue, or what is the basis of your issue with it? Because if Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion want to rap about pussy, what does that have to do with me wanting to or not wanting to sing along with rapping about pussy? You know what I mean? It's entertainment. You can opt in and opt out. And it's based on, again, like individual choice. But I think going back to my two friends, and I think I have a really great diverse fan group that has real conversations and real healthy debates, and leads with empathy in all of those debates. It's about having a real conversation and space for moments of enlightenment of like, wait, actually, it's about something on a personal level. Like, what do you, either way you cut it, it's about agency, right?
Yeah.
And what is your instinct to want to police someone's body? What does that actually say about like what your basis in the thought process is?
That makes sense.
And I will say my other friend who was like, the whole song's about pussy, she loved that song. Oh. She loves it.
I was going to say, I didn't even see anything wrong with like the video or anything. Like my first reaction was like, damn, nah, Megan snapped. Mm-hmm. That second verse was like, let me try to figure out
the lyrics.
You said
Megan snapped?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
Your Honor, I'm a freak bitch, head cuff leash, and I get something to believe in.
The fact that she says Your Honor, like she's cheating. Testifying that. Yo, oh my gosh, wait, I'm sorry. One.
What are you doing? What are you doing?
You don't know. Are we doing Megan slander over there?
Uh-oh.
Okay, as journalists.
Yeah, throw the tomato.
As journalists.
No Megan slander on this show.
As journalists, is there not a difference between an objective opinion and slander?
Oh my gosh.
I asked a simple question.
Look at the gaslight.
Did you? Yeah. Oh, all the words are being used today. Yeah. Oh man.
Duck,
I knew we should have stopped that misogyny war shit at the start of this podcast. No, I just don't think that Megan be snapping, but that's on me. I
don't think she's
at least a while.
No, that's not what I said. I think Megan has the ability to rap very well. Mm-hmm. Now, is her music that she releases indicative of that skill? No. I think the music.
Ever?
She,
is it because
ever?
You don't
or
like
just
what
now
she's rapping
when
about?
She's
no,
wearing like a pop.
No, I like what she can. Kim rapped about that same shit. Kim was nice when she was nice, and then there was records, you know, in the later year that was like,
Mouse just.
Right.
I think.
So you
like
think
I've said,
gotten,
on,
it's gotten stale, or
it's gotten very stale.
Or?
It's gotten very okay. stale, and I think.
Well, WAP was not part of that.
WAP, you gotta say.
I like this. I like the song WAP. I like WAP. Let's. I like the song. I like the institution. I like the song. I like you want to say I like the WAP. I like WAP. But I think all right, that's fine. Cause I want you. I already got two tomatoes thrown.
I had
one
a really good thing, but it's really gonna send you over the edge. I'm like, I'll save it for after.
You might as well say it now.
I'm saying you gotta say it now.
It's okay.
The guests are asking you to say it.
Oh. I'll tell them after.
Oh. the thing I did want to make mention of, there was a part in the in episode 3. I think you're speaking to Dream Doll. And I think something was said to the aesthetic of, you know, things should be about talent and not the way someone looks.
Yeah, that's what she...
You remember that?
Yeah, she's like, it should be about my talent first, but in this industry, it's never about that.
The only world, pushback though. I had on that was...
What?
If not for her looks...
I don't know. If not for her looks, we would never.
She's not. Be she's not
for her talent
because she's not. She when she started, she wasn't good. Mm. She's gotten extremely better from the time she started to now.
I'm not gonna lie, I like the early Dream Doll. I'm on the block, pull up, skirt, yeah. Skirt. Where you at? That. I mean, the hardcore new dream is cool, but the other stuff wasn't bad. It was vibey.
And then you know how...
It was vibey. You hear the words we use?
You notice how many people
that's the word.
Remember like, saying stuff was good?
She had and then it showed up in a Cardi record. It showed up in a Uzi record. It showed up in a Juice
WRLD. And this is before the rebrand where she became all gangsta and shit. Mm-hmm. Mm. She had something. She was just growing. I don't think she needed to switch up, though. Mm. But
I just think... That statement alone was just, I was like, it was weird because I'm like, well, there's certain artists who definitely would not be here if not for their look.
Some of your favorites that you claim are talented, by the way.
Oh, like
who? Well, that I didn't hear.
I said some of your favorites that you claim are talented, by the way.
Oh, like who?
I don't know who you're talking about, but here goes the thing. Great players don't always make great coaches. So, yes, some of the people that I think are really good rappers, they might say she's talented. I don't trust their eye on talent. I just trust them to make music. Don't put nothing else on me now. Leave me alone.
Okay.
Fine. Oh, my goodness.
But looks are important across the board, just in the world. Presentation. Like, your appearance says everything about you before you get to open your mouth. So, mm-hmm. I feel her on that. It should just be about the talent, but it's just...
I disagree. It should never just be about the talent. It's a total package deal with we're talking about here. You got to be able, you have to
I mean,
be.
Yeah, that's what it is. But I do feel like it should be about the talent. There's mad great records, artists that go under talent should lead. But now talent is like an accessory.
It's like has gone so low on the list of essentials. It's so
it's like, oh, she cute. She got a blue check.
Yeah.
This person, they all got a blue check now, brother. $14.99 a month. Everybody got a blue check.
Yeah, you're right.
everybody got a blue check now. $14.99. So
that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
I think my thing with it, obviously y'all can put your input. My thing with it is I think we get so stushy when it comes to talent. Right? Like when Cardi started rapping and putting out music, was she the most talented rapper? Skill-wise, no. But she was talented at selling shit.
She was entertaining.
She was talented at selling herself to people and showing people, hey, you should give a fuck about this going on. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the girls are. And I think the women should have the opportunity to figure out the talent of rapping just like the way the guys do.
No, but the bar is never that. It's never
the
same.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It's never the same, though. Like, that's exactly what we're talking about. Yeah. It's never a level playing field.
I agree. I'm saying it should be. I agree that it's not, but it should be. That's why it's important that men say when you see other men like, oh, there's pussy, here go pussy rap again. Let's ostracize them. Let's make fun of them. Like I have so much fun doing it on Twitter. When I see guys be like, oh, here go pussy rap, I'm like, oh, you don't like pussy now.
Are we gonna start calling it like fucking penis rap? When these like what the fuck, dick rap?
I mean, Spotify's not picking that playlist up.
Yeah, I mean the thing is like you're saying though, the scrutiny only goes one way.
Mm-hmm. Like,
exactly. We don't scrutinize
the
look for dudes, right? And this, you know, you're talking about that episode with Dream Doll,
yeah,
and later in the episode in the Tate. Baby Tate section, yeah. They talk about
you know, it's a lot of dusty Negroes.
Yeah.
In rap, the dusty Negro aesthetic is like a real.
Who's
successful...
a dusty Negro rapper?
I mean, so don't like, make, don't put it on
Ashy
me.
Elbows, wife beater on stage.
I'm just asking, yeah, what I mean, you talking about? Ooh, give me a rapper. Somebody
that's been
who I
an
can
aesthetic
put...
in hip hop for a long time. That's the keep it real aesthetic. Keep it real dusty.
So nobody wants real to say dusty. Nobody wants to put a name.
I mean,
we've been putting a name on everything today, but now we don't want to put a name on a dusty Negro rapper.
You can tell on it's so many. Like, what
give me a DNR.
He said there's so many.
Just give you a what?
Give me a DNR.
DNR, dusty
a dusty Negro rapper.
Oh my God.
Don't feel pressure.
Oh man,
Nyla, who do you think would? Get eyes big now. Yeah, DJ Nyla Simone. Who is somebody you would identify as a dusty Negro rapper?
I never even heard of this term. I don't know.
But now we just told you.
We coining it right now. I guess.
Break it down again, Sydney. You said ashy elbows.
Wife beater
on stage.
Top on stage.
Real little jeans.
I'm thinking of legends. That's like that. That's no. That describes legends right there.
Oh,
what?
I mean. I'm not.
Yeah, he get around real niggas and act like a real nigga. Yeah, Rodney. Yeah, what's going on?
I'm listening.
Damn it! Well, we made it too hot. He was about to give away his position.
We love listening to you guys and all that you're doing. What is next for Louder Than a Riot once the season wraps?
Oh wow, that is a very good question. I'm still trying to figure that out.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair.
I don't know how much we want to speak on that, Sid, if you want to.
Yeah, I mean.
Talk about, you know.
Well, the reality of the situation, which we were talking about a little bit before the mics came on. Media's crumbling, y'all. Mm-hmm. Like, these layoffs are, it's a lot of tumbleweeds rolling through. Like, it's scary hours, mm-hmm. whether it be a print and digital space or an audio space or a video space. Like, there's been layoffs at ESPN, Washington Post, Paper Magazine.
Yep.
And that doesn't even factor in hip-hop media spaces. Hip-hop mm-hmm. media is also a very weird limbo right now. And Louder Than a Riot was one of four narrative long form podcasts that were, what's the word? They don't want to say
that were
discontinued. And so this is going to be tabled. The last table.
Tabled.
What table?
I don't know. We got to find that table.
Well, NPR discontinued the podcast version of our show. So there's not going to be a season three. There's nothing concrete for season three right now, because the reality is it does take a lot of money to create shows like this. We don't be cutting corners. We really dig in and we go for long haul type of interviews, type of chases, type of stories that we tell.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
long form. And we want to stay at that caliber. And that just, you know, it takes a lot of time and a lot of money. In addition to the financial situation, there, in my opinion, there seems to be a real recoil now in the media space, in a lot of different industries, about Black things. You know, in 2020, everybody was really rushing to
mm-hmm.
to start to cover
mm-hmm.
Black stories.
Yep.
Now, you know, when budgets are getting tight, a lot of those Black stories are the first things to go. And I do see in a lot of different spaces, there is a disconnect between what companies will say that they want for an audience and what they're willing to put money into and what they're willing to invest in an intrinsic way.
Right.
Get that audience that they're trying to get. That
Why
they say
are they scared?
Want.
Why are they scared?
Power.
I don't know, because hip hop, the best selling genre and has been for so long.
Same thing with media. They just believe that white people care, white and Black people care more about white things than the return that's going to show for a Black thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I don't know how to change that. I don't know how many times they have to look on YouTube and see all these journalists and see all the money they're bringing in and all the views they're bringing in. Or right. You got to listen to a podcast and see all that. I don't know. I give what I do. When we do this shit, I don't give a fuck about white gays.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, exactly. Listen, if you care about hip hop, if you care about this very Black thing
exactly.
that started out this very Black way,
right.
then this is for you.
Yeah.
And I think if we just focus on that, and obviously that's the like utopian outlook to have, but.
I mean, but yeah, that's like, that's how we enjoy it. You know, that's how we, that's hip hop for yeah. us and to us and by us.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? So why cater to anybody else? I mean, they don't need to be catered to in order to love hip hop. So,
at all. Like, we don't be talking about y'all. Exactly. Y'all be here. Yeah.
So
yeah. Like, we don't be talking to y'all niggas.
We actually be talking about
we
y'all.
We talk about y'all and y'all still show up.
Yeah.
You ever have an aunt, you be like, no, we were just talking about you. Don't join in the laugh. Yeah. You and take we the were, sting out of it. You make fun right. of somebody and they laughing with you. No.
Right.
We're laughing at you.
And we were, I mean, super committed to never being like that from the beginning.
Exactly.
Like that was one of the
yeah, the white gaze.
One of the temples, like we are not translating what none of this means, because traditionally the long form podcast space is also another, it was meant to be like a disruptive space for radio,
mm-hmm.
but it ended up just being another white dominated space.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, when we were making, you know, our pitch to the first season, we were like, we are not doing no, there's this thing at NPR called the explanatory comma. So, and we're like, we're not doing no explanatory commas. We're not translating. We're talking to hip hop audience members first. We're talking to Black people who love hip hop first. And everybody else can catch up. Everybody else can like come along for the ride. But like knowing that they are, you know, the second, not the second tier, but like an additional kind of like tangential. You,
yeah.
Audience.
Yeah.
There's a great mm-hmm. example. You gave about listening to some show and then you got to pause the show and open up another tab if they say something you don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's
do
like,
that all
okay,
the time.
They can, with yeah, this, we do yeah. that if we listen into something.
Exactly. All like, the time.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. There's a lot of examples of that. In the first season, there was a scene about the, I think I might have said this already, but the Bobby Shmurda trilogy, and Sean Money was talking about an MCM bag, and there was, remember there was a discussion about like, should we just say a bag, or should we say what an MCM bag is? It's just like, no,
yeah.
we say an MCM bag.
Right.
Because if you know, you know what an MCM bag is.
You know just how much of a headlock MCM bags had over us in 2014.
No,
we was hemmed up by the MCM bag in the belts, mm-hmm. in the book bags.
Backpack.
Oh my God,
neon
free us.
Green ones.
I'm glad we're free.
Some people ain't. I mean, you go to some parts of Brooklyn, they not. I will say, just to end on the thought of the future of Louder Than a Riot, like, we're still going to tell these stories. Hip hop is an oral tradition. What we do is mm-hmm. an extension of that oral tradition, and it will live on somewhere. We will still work somewhere. Like, there's nothing wrong with the formula. It's
at
really
all.
Just seeing where it fits and yeah. where it can be bankrolled, to be honest with you. Like, right now, it's floating and it's in the air and it's nebulous, but it's going to land.
As we discussed earlier, we're not even more so paying attention to publications. We're just tapping in with the people who are part of our tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys are definitely a part of our tribe.
Yeah.
And we're very thankful.
Look at that.
Don't worry about that. We'll be following you guys regardless, wherever you go.
Just tell Rodney, you'll be like, say something, and then we'll follow the voice.
Follow
the voice.
Hey, we appreciate y'all, man. Thanks for
appreciate y'all, man.
Y'all.
Tell the people where they can find Louder Than a Riot, where they can find you guys, and you know, continue to follow you guys in this as this media landscape gets shaken up.
I mean, I'm pretty much just, you know, old head on Twitter. I do a little lurking on Instagram, but you know,
a little.
I don't know. Messages get lost. I don't even hit me on Instagram. You know, I still don't know how to do all that.
But what's the Twitter name?
Oh yeah, right.
And that's how you know he ain't lying.
I thought he really got on it on Twitter.
Hey, find me on Twitter.
Wait.
Where?
And it's not even your name too, so it's not even like they can look.
I am at Rodneyology. Just Rodney. With ology on the end. O L O G Y.
I like that.
Mm, yeah. Dissertations for days.
Well, not
40 characters or less. Mm, yeah. and you can catch me always clowning on Rodney
yes.
on Twitter and elsewhere. Everywhere. It's at Sid_Madden. And you can hear everything about Louder on NPR or wherever you get your podcasts. So Spotify, Amazon, Apple, all that. And you can follow at Louder Than Riot on Twitter.
Yep.
Love that. Until next time, guys. Thank you guys for joining us. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, follow. I'm sorry, I forgot to hit that. But like, share, subscribe, follow. We'll be back again next Monday.
Peace. Oh. Don't miss an episode of The What? Hip Hop Questions, Legends, and Lists. Listen and subscribe on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts. The What? Hip Hop Questions, Legends, and Lists podcast is a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network, and our executive producer is Darren Byrne and produced by A-King.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
The NBA Finals begin Thursday, June 6th, at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC.
During the summer, when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with your friends. Or alone on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected, so you can enjoy all the summertime vibes. Whether you're sharing a pic from a rooftop, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show, episode after episode. So stay connected to your favorite people and your favorite things with AT&T 5G and home internet. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like,
whoa.
And,
hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.